Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Well, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And since we are at the middle of the month, we typically do one of two things. We sometimes will have a new moon or dark moon ritual, but often we talk about
we talk about stuff.
And sometimes it's stuff related to the upcoming moon in question, or it's seasonally related. It kind of depends on what, you know, the time of year and what kind of mood we are in. And this year, well, one of the other things we do, besides what we do here with Circle Sanctuary as members of the Cyber Ministries team, as Selena likes to call it, is we also, let's see, was it 5, 6 years ago?
What's that?
Homecoming, dear?
Yes, this would be their 6th year.
Yeah, so we got together with a group of people several years ago, and we put on a Samhain retreat up here in Northern Virginia, and because we could not have one in person, we decided to do something virtually with a series of workshops. And back in 2019, our guest tonight was the special presenter. And so this year she was one of our special presenters at our virtual workshop series.
Right. So, like, this year, what we did was we asked all the special guests from the previous 5 years to come on and present, give workshops, and be part of our activities this year. And tonight's guest was our special guest last year at Howl at Homecoming. And she gave her discussion, her talk, Bake, recently, just to
based on
that.
Yes.
Which is also based on this conversation. So part of what we're going to be doing tonight is kind of following up on that and some other questions and some other new stuff and things like that, too. So with our guest.
And our guest tonight is Amy Blackthorne. She is or has been described as an arcane horticulturalist for her lifelong work with magical plants. She has a certification in aromatherapy and incorporates her experiences in traditional witchcraft with her horticultural studies.
Okay.
She's also an ordained minister, and she has a company called, and that's been around for quite a while, called Blackthorn's Hoodoo Blends, and this is where she creates tea based on old hoodoo herbal formulas. She is also an author of 3 books, the latest of which is the topic of tonight's discussion, called Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, Herbal Potions, Magical Teas, and Spirited Libations. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being on. I know that you have a podcast that you also do. We'll mention that a little later on in the hour. You have your business. You, like I just mentioned, you are an author of 3 books, and you teach a variety of different classes, different places. And I know it can be kind of difficult getting people scheduled to have very full lives when it comes to all the different works that they do. And one of the first things I like to ask is, how did you get started in doing the particular thing that you do? We'll start with your business and then kind of move on into how you got started or why you decided to write your books. So where was the inspiration, or why did you decide to start your business?
So I have been in security for about 15 years. And in executive security and asset protection and all sorts of various places. And it had gotten to the point where my current contract was a nightmare. It really was. Like, I was the head of security for two high-rises here in Wilmington, Delaware. They were the two largest commercial properties in the state, which meant that 35 floors of people were, their safety was my entire job. That leads the average person to say, okay, that's a lot of fires to put out. And sometimes they're literal fires. Getting phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep. I was inundated pretty much every hour of the day. And I said, you know what? This is not great for me. This is not a place where I want to be. So I put in my 2 weeks. I trained my replacement. And on my very first day as a joyfully unemployed person, I went downstairs to my kitchen and I got a bottle of the Van Van oil that I make and a candle and my big cauldron. And I started carving and anointing and telling this candle exactly what I needed. I needed something to get rid of all the baggage of my last contract and make room for something new and amazing. Something where I could put my witchy talents to use, something that embraced who I am. And it really was fulfilling. So I'm anointing and I'm carving and I'm talking out loud to myself. And the doorbell rang. And I think, this is the fastest spell work I've ever done. So it was the postal carrier. She was bringing me a package I had to sign for. Well, I go back in the kitchen and I take a deep breath and all I can smell is the lemongrass in my abandoned oil. The whole kitchen smelled like lemongrass. And my first thought was, wow, you know, if I had a tea that blends itself, you know, it's the same aromatics, it's the same feeling, it's the same everything, I can take that working and extend it through while I sit and sip my tea. I'm still keeping an eye on the candle. We always, you know, we never leave a burning candle unattended. And I can extend my working. I can make it even more potent by keep working this working while I'm drinking my tea. And so the little light bulb goes on over my head. And I think, okay, well, I've been producing these oils for 20 years. I might as well translate them into another medium and make them teas that I can drink. And in 2 days, I had 15 teas based off these recipes. And it was actually kind of difficult for a few of them because nothing in the recipe was potable. Nothing in the recipe was something you wanted to put in your body. So those were a great magical challenge because I wanted everything to still have the same feeling and the same use. So translating those items into something you'd want to drink in a tea was a very interesting challenge. So that was almost 7 years ago. And I've recently rebranded as Black Thorns Botanicals because though the first, we'll say 25 teas were blends that were based in my practice in hoodoo, the rest of them find my inspiration from the more of the witchcraft things that I do. So they're two separate practices, but practiced by one person. So it's blackthornsbotanicals.com. And as a matter of fact, as of yesterday, I have poured my first few batches of the botanical magic line. I wanted to create candles to match the teas with certain intentions based out of my first book, Black Thorns Botanical Magic. So those candles should be going up on the website, blackthornsbotanicals.com, in probably tomorrow or the day after. So absolutely keep an eye on blackthornsbotanicals.com. So I'm really excited. The first one I blended was Ancestor Support. The tea is chestnut and walnut and like mahogany notes in the very back of your sinuses, and just a you can smell just a hint of salt. They're all heavy grounded hardwoods that create a lasting impression. So they're not only are they our ancestors, but they're a beautiful connection to the ancestors of all of us. The candle that matches has a frankincense and myrrh base for that connection to spirituality. But it also has bay leaf for connection and communication. And there's almost a whiskey note in the very back of your nose that sort of whispers there. The candle itself is the color of antique lace. The first round of candles will be in containers, being very concentrated. So I'm really tickled with experimenting in the candle base differences for the pillar candles versus the tins. So the tins that I use for my tea are the same ones that I'm using for candles, so they match. Very cute. So not all of them will match. You know, they're not making 85 blends of tea into candles, but just a select few to really empower and help those looking for some connection to create it.
That's cool. Now, I'm I'm connecting to this weirdly internet-wise. So I looked at your, I went to the Amy Blackthorne, and then I piggybacked from the Howl Homecoming page, because it was just easiest for me to remember that. So I clicked on that. Now I'm at Blackthorne Hoodoo Blends. If I also go to Blackthorne's Botanicals, is the identical information still in there?
Yeah,
sorry if I'm being a little internet dumb.
After 7 years with one URL, everywhere is going to go to the same place.
Okay, so it'll be the same. Okay.
I'm
just being a little bit slow and being a little bit special here, so I thought I'd ask because it's kind of at the top of my mind. So, I know, and I'm looking at all this stuff. You've got the quick list of teas, black teas, and your traditional formulas. I mean, we could spend over an hour, just talking about all the stuff you do, but I'm going to try to not be ADD and focus on the book, because it has got the book, and I really like the book, Blackthorne's Botanical Brews. Number one, I like it because it's a hardback book, and I really like hardback books. I'm kind of over things with paperback covers because sometimes it's not easy to keep a book open if you're, like, doing things.
Right.
I like something a little bit more sturdy. We've had cats, not the current batch that we have, but we have had cats that like to chew on books. We had one in particular.
Oh, yeah, we have books that have ratted, you know, chewed on corners.
Yeah, and you're not likely to see that with this particular book. It's got this kind of cloth-like cover on it. It's very cool. So what was your, before I get into this, I mentioned at the top of the hour that you have written 3 books. This is your 3rd book. What was your motivation for writing books? I mean, because you could have just stayed with what you were doing with on the business end of things and teaching classes and all that good stuff. So why did you write your first book?
Well, I've wanted a book with my name on it. I've wanted to write a book since before I could write my own name. I grew up in a house of readers and books, so the idea that people all over the world would hear what I had to say has entranced me since I was in the single digits. Even before I started elementary school, my mom got me a very pretty diary. She hoped I would write my thoughts and feelings, and instead I just wrote fiction stories. so even before I could use a college ruled notebook, you know, you're still writing with the big three lines in kindergarten. I was writing stories in that notebook. There's always been running litany of things that I've been talking about in the back of my head. And so this was just not just a creative outlet, but this was almost a foregone conclusion in my mind that no matter what it was, I was going to write it down. My first publishing, I got published at 16 when I was in high school in a peer-reviewed journal. I wrote a 20-page research paper comparing Christian religious traditions with Wiccan ones, and it caused some troubles. I was going to school in a very, very rural part of Maryland, in which at the time the KKK was still holding Sunday rallies in the morning on Sundays on Main Street, the next town over, handing out flyers in broad daylight, saying, "Oh yes, blah blah blah, we're scum." So I was taking a lot of chances by doing this research and not really hiding who I was anymore. I had been yanked out of the broom closet that year, a little bit earlier that year. So in the fall versus in the spring, it was awful. Let's be honest. I did not choose this. This is not something that I wanted. Someone who considered herself my rival decided to tell the entire class, the entire school, that, oh, hey, that Amy chick, she's a witch. So I had death threats. I had kids on the bus attempt to stone me. Like, this was not a fan of this. But the word never stopped coming. I have journals and journals and journals full of stories and thoughts and feelings. So when I was approached by Judica Illis from Wiser to take some of my materials and turn them into books and really be able to express my ideas, I was like, absolutely. I jumped at the chance to submit a proposal for my very first book. And it's a long process. We chatted in December of 2015, and it wasn't until February of 2017 that I wound up signing the contract. And then a little over a year later, year and a half later, we had Black Doors of Satanical Magic. I was sitting in a family funeral right around the time I was starting to really contemplate the class that I wanted to teach. And when I start writing a book, I teach the class first. I sort of get the kinks out and then make it into a long form of a book, see what needs to go in, what people are interested in, that kind of thing. So I'm sitting in this family funeral. It was one of those great aunt so-and-sos that you've never met, but you go because it's a familial obligation. So we had to go back to my mother's neighborhood where she grew up and to the Catholic church there. And so I had been in a Catholic church maybe once or twice, and it didn't hold any mystery, but it wasn't exactly something I sought out as a recreational idea. So my mother's late. My sisters aren't there. It's just me and the half of the family that isn't Catholic but is very, very Protestant, scarily Protestant. So I'm sitting at the edge of this pew, sort of anxious and nervous and waiting for my mother to show up, because I'm waiting for my aunt to start on her diatribe about how I'm going to hell because I'm a witch. So I'm anxious and sort of fidgeting. And the procession starts. The rear doors into the church open, and they're wheeling the casket in, and there's the censers of incense, and there's the priest, and the guy holding the big cross on a stick. So the priest takes the lectern, and all of a sudden I'm okay. I'm not fidgety anymore. And I don't think that it's because it started and that means it'll be over at some point. It took me 30 seconds to a minute to understand what had happened. The censers walking past me were carrying frankincense and myrrh that were burning. Uh-huh. My very first high priestess, you know, I found my first book when I was 11. So by the time I turned 18 and was old enough to join a coven, I ran out and joined the first coven I could find. Never do that. Don't do it. Date around a bit. but my very first high priestess would really smoke the whole place out with frankincense and myrrh before every ritual. She described herself as a recovering Catholic, and so she kept that incense piece because that felt good to her. So the 5 years I spent with this first coven, every month was the fog of frankincense and myrrh, and then the grounding and centering, and then we jump into ritual. So my brain had skipped from, oh, I'm anxious and I'm upset, to the minute my brain encountered this smoke of frankincense and myrrh, I had done my grounding and centering without thinking about it. My brain had already gotten me into ritual mode. I'm ready to go. Let's do the thing. Without any input from me. So I was really interested to see how this mechanism happens and how we can take control of it for our own use. How can we trick our brains and our bodies into being calm and relaxed when we don't feel like we are? So we have the magic of essential oils right there. You know, how can they help us magically? How can we work in concert with these plant allies? So it was just a great idea when just sort of spiraled out from there. While I was writing Black Earth Botanical Magic, kept coming up with incense recipes, and I kept kicking myself. No, this is an aromatherapy book. I don't need incense. So I left maybe one or two in there. But I really wanted the aromatic herbs to have their very own book. So we have Sacred Smoke, which came out in October of last year. So that's sort of individual herbs and how they can be utilized for cleansing your space, for protecting it, for all the myriad uses. But the most important thing was to try and get people to stop picking up sage every 5 minutes. Sage is not the answer. There are a million plants that are right in your own backyard that can be utilized in a way that's helpful for you, that you're working and developing relationships with your native plants that are indigenous to where you physically are standing. Things like the clover and plantain that grow in most of the yards on the East Coast, all that stuff is there in your lawn, and it was begging to be utilized in Sacred Smoke. The joy and happiness that clover brings, and the peace and healing that plantain carries, like, those are really valuable assets to have an allyship with. There's a whole section on things you can grow on purpose to be utilized in cleansing your space with smoke. So it's building your very own authentic practice. It's understanding why people use some things that are a little bit more popular, but it's creating your very own roadmap to creating an authentic smoke practice. It's not just about, well, Susie down the street says that sage is good for everything. It's not. You have to understand that the number of people that indigenously have a sacred relationship with sage, white sage especially, Salvia apiana, is so important. Like, there are a million plants that want to be worked with, that want to be used, that aren't over-harvested, that aren't heading toward the endangered species list because people want to utilize a little bit of everything. So there's basil and oregano and fennel and marjoram and really incredible plants that will grow in your yard that want to be working with us. There's a reason that Salvia apiana does not grow well. It's not farmed. Most of the bundles that you see out in the world, they say, oh, these are wild crafted, as though this makes them better than all the other sage out there. Most sage is wild crafted because it doesn't want to grow in farms. It doesn't grow straight and pretty. It grows on the side of a mountain in the poorest soil on this planet for a reason. Like, you have to go to the desert and find it. It wants to have you commit some energy to working with it, not just something that's going to grow as a wild weed down the street. Mugwort will. Mugwort wants to work with you. Clover wants to work with you. There are so many really incredible plants that are readily available. So I really loved the idea of being able to take this idea and sort of decolonize it, take the cultural appropriation aspect out of it and have you create something that's authentic to you. The last, most recent book that came out last Monday, very excited about, Black Earth Botanical Brews. This was really fun because I wanted the opportunity. I wanted to really dive in. There are very, very few potions books available because people are worried about allergies. They're worried about getting sued. They're worried about their hallucinogenic, which plants are aphrodisiac. Like, they're not written by herbalists. They're not written by people who really understand what it's like to work with plants. So Black Ferns Botanical Brews, I wanted something that helped demystify potions and really get people in there, get their hands dirty, figure out things, and play. There's so very little play that's left in magic, and it's important because that's the easiest way for us to learn. It takes, 100 to 200 repetitions of something to get it, but only, 20 or so if you're playing. Well, play with your magic. Make sodas, make punches, make cocktails, make mocktails. Like, play with these materials and figure out how they work well together. I was doing a video last night for Red Bill Weiser's Facebook page. It was an hour-ish interactive video where I talked about some of the materials. I made two different cocktails, and I made some syrup, and we made some really great stuff. And in during this play aspect, I created a new cocktail, the Italian Job. So one of my favorite things to work with is a shrub. Very easy, and it's infinite number of combinations. You take one cup of fruit, one cup of sugar, and one cup of vinegar, and you combine them and you let them sit out on the counter for 2 days. The vinegar breaks the cell wall, releases all the sugar in that fruit. You can use vegetables, you can add herbs for flavor. But the vinegar breaks the cell wall and releases all that flavor into this beautiful syrup. I use those to flavor soda. So you just boil water and you have a homemade soda. So I've been experimenting with these for about a year. Strawberries and chocolate vinegar, peaches and thyme with apple cider vinegar. So the one that I've really come to favor, and I think it's really spectacular, is this watermelon. So I chop up watermelon, I add the vinegar and the sugar, and then let it sit for, about 2 days. And by the time you're done, you have this thick, beautiful syrup with little pink sparkles in it from the watermelon pulp that's left over. And you add, we'll say, one part watermelon syrup to two parts sparkling water, and you have a really lovely soda. But if it's after 5 o'clock, you can put a shot of this beautiful Uncle Val's Botanical Gin in there. Very cucumber forward. So I had my cucumber and I had my watermelon, and it made a really lovely cocktail. So it's all about figuring out what these plants, the botanical spirits, what they bring to their magical practice, and how to build your own cocktail that's just as magically potent as any other potion.
And you brought up shrubs. So to back up just a tiny bit, last Saturday was your workshop that you held at our event via Zoom, and you used the word shrub. And this is before I bought the book. I hadn't gotten the book yet. And I'm like, shrub, what the hell is she talking about? That's a plant. What? And now that I have the book, I know what a shrub is, and I never heard that term used to describe what you were talking about. And the idea of selecting a fruit and a vinegar, fruit with vinegar, and then you said sugar, right?
Yep.
Yeah, the 1:1:1 ratio.
Yeah.
I mean, given all of the various kinds of fruits there are out there, there are berries, there are citrus fruits,
mm-hmm.
there's other fruits that grow on trees, other tropical fruits.
Yeah, huge options there.
Yeah, it's pretty much nearly limitless.
Yeah.
So I was intrigued by this idea of what a shrub is. Another question I have, and this is in the same section, I will start by mentioning how this particular book is laid out. And she has lots of cool recipes. We have lots of the liquor here David. This is a hint, by the way.
Okay. you should be mixing something right now.
Well, we're downstairs in the basement where our library, where our living room is, but probably as soon as we're done, we will. We don't have absinthe, but we do have amaretto. We've got bourbon. We've got rums. We've got vodka. The first, I guess, approximately half of the book-ish, is with that is where the drinks are based on spirits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about dead people. I'm talking about
alcoholic spirits.
But what's really cool, though, I had to put a disclaimer there. But you also, and this what a great idea, tools of the brewcraft, and how the tools that one uses for making alcoholic drinks are associated with our traditional magical tools. Like the wand is the muddler. We don't have a muddler. We've been talking about getting a muddler. You need to get a muddler, Dave.
Okay.
Various types of glassware that you use, the athame with knives, strippers, and zesters. The pinnacle is the cutting board. Bar cabinet is altar space. I mean, this is a great idea.
Oh, it is.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I really liked this correlation that you made. I'm like, it would not have occurred to me until you listen out like that. I'm like, well, yeah, I really like that. And we've been, since, this is a very timely book because since we are at home and we don't have the opportunity to be with other humans very much, David and I have been experimenting with a variety of different kinds of alcoholic beverages. And this
It's not safe to go to a bar. You know, all of our friends are missing us. It's a great time to, you know, make yourself a cocktail, hang out with somebody on Zoom, and remember where you are without having to worry about who has to drive home.
Right. And this also, this particular book also incorporates these kitchen witch type elements because you're talking about spirits, you're talking about different kinds of fruits, you're talking about also teas, and essentially you are incorporating foods that also have their own magical properties. And you mentioned something a little bit earlier. You mentioned allies, plant allies, and some people just use the thing in nature. They've read books. Okay, this is good for this, so I'm going to use this for this thing without necessarily having, I don't want to say reverence, but maybe reverence is the way to put it, or trying to create some sort of allyship with the organism that you're working with. And in this case, we're talking about plants. And it does make a lot more sense to try to utilize things, and this kind of dovetails into not only kitchen witchery but maybe hedge witchery, this idea of using things that's available to you but using things that are native to you and to your area. I like exotic resins as well as the next person, and I do use them when I make incense, but we also use a lot of plants that we can grow in our own backyard, a lot of herbs, and I'm going to call the so-called weeds, and a weed to some is a plant ally to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I like the idea that you are talking about that, because it is something that most other authors, when they talk about the magical uses of herbs, do not talk about. And I think it is an important thing to incorporate, or at least to familiarize yourself with, if you're going to be working with plants. My own personal opinion. So, So again, the first half of the book is talking about a variety of different kinds of different brews, different mixed drinks and cocktails. One thing that you also talk about is something called a switchel. What's a switchel? If I had heard that term, if I had not read it in the book, I would have thought a switchel is maybe like a satchel.
Oh.
No, that's not a, yeah. It's not a thing that you carry.
Go ahead.
Switchels
are one of the oldest beverages on the planet. That's just a blend of water, molasses, and vinegar. They, you know, to get a shrub, you'd have to add some fruit or some veggies in there, some flavor. It was a way for you to incorporate the cooling properties of the vinegar on the back of your throat to feel your body feels cooler, and to sweeten it so you're not just drinking vinegar water. It was a way to keep the microorganisms down, to have safe water to drink in lots of places. You know, you go to a resort and they offer you a very low alcohol beer instead of water from the tap because it's not safe to drink. It's a lot of the same ideas. The switchels are actually mentioned in the Bible. Ruth is drinking one during some field labor in her story. And so the idea is very, very, very old. It's as old as mead and beer and those. It's just, it has fallen out of favor, so people don't really know what they are, but it is their idea to sort of take those flavors and incorporate them in a way that can be pleasant to drink, especially since these were around before we had air conditioning. It was a way to cool the body in a very natural and organic way, and it's a great way to incorporate things like apple cider vinegar with those probiotic benefits. They talk about drinking apple cider vinegar to help your digestion and help your different systems of your body operate at their best effectiveness. So this is a way to get those health benefits without actually having to drink straight vinegar, which doesn't appeal to a whole lot of people. So we have the switchel, and then once fruit started getting incorporated, then it became a shrub. So we have two different families right there with, again, nearly limitless combinations. There's a whole section on those syrups and those different pieces in the book. So it's great to have a springboard of what to do and how to do it. But once you have that idea down, you can just run to the stars with it. There's so many flavored sugars. There's the maple sugar, and you can flavor your own sugars yourself. I keep a vanilla bean in my sugar bowl for that really soft, beautiful vanilla flavor. You can use flavored sugars. You can use flavored syrups. You can do all sorts of great things with it. So, and the different varieties that vinegars are available in. I mean, there's a whole aisle in my grocery store of different vinegars. So, like the Prosecco vinegar is really light, like the Prosecco wine. It's just not carbonated. So I use that with stuff like the watermelon, because it has such a light flavor. If I'm using something that needs more depth, I might add a little bit of balsamic vinegar to give it a richer, fuller flavor to it. And then because these things can get expensive, you don't have to use 100% of one vinegar or another. I got a batch of strawberries that I did. It was probably 90% apple cider vinegar and 10% was balsamic because of that rich, beautiful depth of flavor. And it really brings out the sweetness and that syrupy goodness of strawberries. So there's a great way to figure out what complements what. I did an apple cider vinegar base for a burlesque show in Philadelphia last September for the Temple of Venus. I volunteered to bring a gallon of my fantastic shrub. This one was a peach with thyme and apple cider vinegar. And so it came out really beautiful and earthy. I added a lemon vanilla bean, just so it wasn't quite as bright. It just smoothed down those edges. And for those who are interested in having an adult beverage, we added some creme de violette and rum, and that was, oh, it's beautiful. And those who were not interested in imbibing alcohol, we added to a really lovely soda, and you got a peach soda. So, you know, there's too many times when you find you go to a party, you go to an event, you know, when we were allowed to do those things. And there were no options for someone who didn't drink beer or alcoholic beverages. If you're the designated driver, if you're sober, if you're on medication, whatever your reason, it's really no one's business. But so frequently there's no option for someone who's not imbibing.
One of the things that your book does, that was one of the first things I noticed, was that you have the sober option for these different drinks. You have a little picture, the sober substitution, and you've got it all through here so that people who are not drinking for any particular purpose, or you are in recovery, this is still a useful book to have, and it's a fun book to have too, because again, although there's a decent chunk of the book that's devoted to the use of spirits with different magical concoctions, you can make substitutions that are non-alcoholic, for sure. One of the things that you, again, since you were talking about the uses of vinegar, this kind of dovetails into fire cider. And you're not the first person I've heard that talks about fire cider, but I didn't know there was a controversy surrounding it. So if you can briefly explain what fire cider is and why, and like kind of where that came from, and what the big deal is with you calling things fire cider.
So this is a folklore recipe, a lot like Four Thieves vinegar. It wasn't invented by essential oil companies. These are recipes that have their own familial iterations, their own regional ideas. So this is a drink. Fire cider is intended to increase your own immunity so that you're safe and you're protected against things like the flu. So it is a number of different things that are imbued. They're placed in usually apple cider vinegar. Beautiful, helpful benefits of the individual ingredients, things like ginger, onions, garlic, lemon, lime, orange. So we have the fire. So we have cinnamon and ginger, things that promote immunity. They're anti-inflammatory. And then the fruits that impart things like vitamin C. And a good number of people sweeten it because otherwise it's a rough ride. So there's the honey that coats your throat. Everything feels beautiful, and when you're drinking it, a little bit of honey, you can add it to salad dressings and all sorts of things to get your daily vitamins. But it's a great mix. It does a lot with people really good. The problem was that there was a company a few years ago that started making their own fire cider, which is fine. It's not a protected recipe. It's not a secret. Then the problem came when they wanted to trademark the word fire cider. Now, see, there's the idea of it being around, and then there's the recipes that have come out of Rosemary Gladstar's work and a couple other herbalists' work in the 70s. But it's been around so much longer than this individual company who wants to trademark a word like fire cider. So the herbalists and the naturalists who have been working with fire cider for, you know, as long as they have, saying, oh, now you can't use the words Firesider to market your product. You can't say it. This only refers to this company. It was a big legal battle for them to try and get back the right to be able to call their concoctions Firesider. The judge did finally rule in favor of the herbalists and say, this is a recipe that's been around since before your company. You can't trademark these words, right. Firesider. Quite a number of years, frankly, from the outside looking in, I was worried that they were going to lose. It was a big fear for me. So seeing especially how the number of companies, especially the MLMs who trademark things like Four Seas vinegar. Okay, this is a vinegar. Now every company that has the option has their own seeds blend. Like they didn't invent this. This is a cultural property. It's not individually owned.
Right. And I didn't know that about the Firesider.
I've heard that.
But I've known for a while about the Four Thieves. And, yeah, there's a couple of companies, one in particular, that has their own, quote-unquote, Four Thieves essential oil blend. But I've seen mention of that and various iterations of that blend of either essential oils that's made into an essential oil blend or the actual Four Thieves vinegar blend that is based on the addition of certain uses of certain botanicals to add to a vinegar to make a vinegar out of it. For originally, it came around, and your book mentions it, during the Black Plague. And the story goes that these thieves, who were grave robbers, drank this blend. I'd also heard an iteration of this where these thieves would carry or have bunches of these particular herbs in question. One of them is lavender. I've also read rosemary and a variety of other things that happen to be very highly antibacterial. So I've heard different versions of the story. But anyway, it goes, there's these key herbs, as it turns out, that people have studied, are very highly antimicrobial and antibacterial, and that's how they kept from dying. Which is kind of an amazing thing when you think of that, you know, these were superstitious people who really didn't know, have a clue about a lot of other things. They used to bleed people and to try to get rid of ill humors. But, you know, but somehow this managed to make its way through into something that was actually useful. So I think that's just a really interesting thing that we can, you know, we have these very old uses of practices of plants in a variety of ways, and it's good to have these traditional recipes for things, but also to have our updated versions of things too. And in the class, you had talked about, you know, quite a bit with liquors, but you mentioned, you know, the shrubs early on and talking about vinegars and using the vinegars in different ways. But one of the things that also caught my attention was infused liquors. And if you could talk about that for a few minutes. I know we're getting close to the top of the hour.
Already?
I know. I've only mentioned a simple full of things in the book. I know.
One of my favorites is the gin that's mentioned in the book. I infused some of my Werewolves of London tea in this beautiful, beautiful gin. So you have a green Earl Grey tea matched with the botanicals of the cucumber and sage and more lavender and a little bit of lemon. So they worked really well together for a number of cocktails. We think of vodkas and rums and the like, and they are, but they lend themselves so well to creating and using that as a base for your canvas. One of the big scary secrets that I learned while writing Blacksmith's Botanical Magic is that, or Botanical Brews, is that bitters, the backbone of current cocktail culture, they're just tinctures, and you can make them yourself. You know, it's in writing and helping people understand making your own vermouth, making your own bitters, creating your own cocktail blend. Like, it's a very interesting phenomenon that all people want is the permission to go and try these different things. So making bitters with chocolate, you know, getting that the raw cacao at your local food store, the making grapefruit or orange or lemon bitters to go with your cocktails. Like, these are really beautiful things, and so you expand that out to the entire field of infused alcohols, and it's everything from adding a vanilla bean to the bourbon you bought the other day because it's just too smoky or just too meaty for you. Okay, that's fine, but that's a great place to start. My Florida water tea, it's got blood orange and hibiscus and a lot of really beautiful materials, just happen to have a lot of vitamin C in it. And so you infuse it with a nice 80 or 100 proof vodka, and you've got a nice citrusy base for a beautiful cocktail. By practicing and by experimenting and being willing to be wrong, I think that's the biggest part, is that no, you're an adult. That's with your own money. No one's going to be mad at you if there's some waste. It's part of the learning process. You got to be willing to be wrong. But it was really incredible way to think about incorporating the idea of magic with your things that you're imbibing, things that you're creating, making tea cocktails. I mean, this is one of my favorite things at New Year's a few years ago was, My friends had requested tea cocktails. Absolutely. That's what we'll do. The best part is nobody gets a hangover because you're drinking so much tea. There's so much water in the mix. You're not necessarily drinking enough to give yourself a hangover. It was great. It's just the idea of the experimentation that really gets people going.
Right. One of the things I find interesting, Earl Grey tea-infused gin. And you are well aware that not all alcohol brands are created equal. So I'm going to ask you outright right now, are there some brands that you do like to use? Because, you know, we know that there are some that are good brands and some that are just crappy brands of alcohol. What do like to use for your vodka and for your gin? In particular,
my favorite gin right now is the Uncle Val's Botanical Gin. When I was writing this book, I figured, okay, I know a few good brands of gin, but I really want to expand my palate. So I went to the local liquor store, and I said, hey, I need something that's fun, that's really got a full body and a great character, and something that I haven't seen before. And the gentleman pulled this bottle of Uncle Val's off of the shelf and said, this is really great. He also held up the Botanist, which I have experienced, and it is I really do like that profile. But the Uncle Val's is very cucumber forward rather than just straight ginger up your nose. It's really lovely cucumber. There's also garden sage and lavender and lemon. This was this gentleman lived in Sicily. And the gin was the inspiration behind his garden. His garden inspired the gin. It was really incredible. So it tastes like summer. It tastes like you spent the day pulling weeds, and now you need to cool off with something sweet and refreshing. And it's just an incredible gin. I really, really like it. I was able to find a larger bottle for the same price as some of the more expensive gins that aren't very good. So, it's just beautiful. It's gorgeous. As far as vodkas, if I'm doing something that's a vodka-based cocktail, I usually grab for the Belvedere. There's Grey Goose, and there's a lot of other blends out there, but I really like the feel or the texture of the vodka in that Belvedere uses. If I'm making tinctures or I'm making bitters, like I'll use my liquor store has a gallon jug for, you know, $8 or $9, or at least they did before the pandemic. Everybody started making hand sanitizer out of it. So you can get really cheap vodka for tinctures and for making bitters. You're using a drop or two at a time. It's just important that people start out with something quality if they're making themselves a cocktail. I'll buy the cheap stuff for medicine. That's fine. No one's taking that for the flavor.
Do you also use those to make infused vodkas as well? You said the Belvedere? Or do you use something else?
I have used the Belvedere. If I am using it to make the infused alcohol, I'll do something middle of the road. I only use the bargain basement stuff for medical things because it's cheap, but I use a lot of it. I make a lot of skullcap tincture. I make a lot of lemon balm tincture. I'm frequently have people coming to me for things that are calming because it's 2020 and who doesn't need something? Tinctures, I'll do bargain basement stuff, but infused alcohol, I'll use something middle of the road. I don't want to peel the paint off of the kitchen window. but then for cocktails themselves, I'll use something that's, you know, I'll use the Belvedere, I'll use some of those. I have had people offer me corn liquor before, family members, friends, things like that. Depending on the proof, the proof that I have received as gifts in the past, I make sure and remind people, don't use Everclear. Don't use something that's 185, 195 proof. It's too much. There's a lot of cell damage that happens. People would have to cut it down by half, and then if you're reducing it by half, it's another step. I just start with 100 proof as often as possible.
Good to know. We're 8:57 already.
Yeah.
This does have a lot of really cool recipes. Do we have triple sec in there?
We do.
How interesting. I just found, because I'm like.
You have the makings for an original, which you mentioned amaretto, and you mentioned bourbon or whiskey. Perfect, perfect. Just make an old fashioned and put a shot of amaretto in it. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it earlier as I was reading through things.
Yep.
And there's also the cranberry infused triple sec. It should be perfect.
So good.
Yep. Just we don't use the triple sec very often, and getting ready into that season.
Right.
Yep. And you gotta start it early because it takes a good 6 weeks or so.
Oh,
so,
get it going.
I'm just saying. You might have to stop off at the liquor store to get a few more things so we can get started on some stuff. Just saying. Yeah, so I mean, as I mentioned, early on in the pandemic, we started looking at some of the various things we had in our cabinet, in our cupboard for different things that we can make and experiment with. And so we've been experimenting with a variety of different recipes that David has found on the internet. David drinks more whiskey and bourbon. I like rums and vodkas, but I also like other different kinds of things as well.
Yeah.
So experimenting with different blends and different stuff, and this is the perfect way to start your holiday season.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you make you make one of these blends and just kind of chillax after the end of a particularly annoying day where maybe your internet didn't work and you're working from home or other such nonsense, and you just kind of let the cares of the day
wash away.
And in addition to that, in your book, especially because you have in parentheses the various foods and herbs and fruits and stuff and what their magical associations are, so you can definitely use this book as a wonderful jumping off point. If you are a little bit more of a novice in the witchery world, this is a great place to start. I would also definitely recommend the botanical magic book, because I've got that as well, and it's got a lot of good recipes for aromatherapy based things, different formulas for all kinds of stuff. But start looking at things that you normally eat. Look at your kitchen herbs. Look at some of these common things that grow right in your backyard, and start experimenting. You know, have a little bit of fun. It's also worth noting that when you are, and you mentioned this at the top of the hour, that when you are doing things that are fun, you are more interested in it. You get more out of it. You're more likely to remember it because it is something that you are enjoying doing. And with everything that's going on in the world, I think we do need a little bit more in our life that's not quite so heavy, you know. We need to just sit back and chillax a bit, find a quiet place, and experience what the plant world has to offer, and this is a great way to do it.
Thank you so much.
This was fun. This was fun. And
so fun.
What is the next thing you've got going on? Now, you regularly have a podcast. How often do you do your podcast?
Right now, it's been working out to about once a month. It's more often if I get surprised by something, I get something to think about. I'll be releasing a new podcast episode probably tomorrow, maybe later tonight. I really love being able to curl up. I've got 60 pounds of pit bull in my lap, taking a nap. I'm just worked up in the podcast studio, so I may just stay here and put on another episode. It's been going since February, and I actually started right before the pandemic. I was just like, oh, hey, I need something to get this, my thoughts out. And so there's probably 9 episodes to listen through. There's some interviews, there's some thoughts about things, and it's great for just listening to. You've got things to do, you're putting around the house to have somebody to keep you company. So it's called The Blackthorn Grove, and you can find it on Apple, Stitcher, Anchor Podcast. Just search for Blackthorn Grove. There's a Facebook page you can like and get notified when there's new episodes that come out. And if you subscribe, it's fantastic. It'll automatically send it out to your podcast device, whatever app you listen under. It'll let you know that there's a new episode whenever one pops up.
And like all of these work in the podcasting world, you also are able to listen to archived episodes. Once you subscribe to somebody's podcast, you're able to hear,
right,
and download previous episodes.
And it's so great to be able to figure out where someone started, see the progression of their podcast, to see their progression of their thoughts and ideas on things. So I love finding new witchy podcasts to check out.
Cool. And are you going to be teaching anywhere anytime soon?
Yes, I've got another class with the amazing folks at Finding Avalon. I teach there about once a month. They're lots of really great, fantastic people. So you can search for Finding Avalon on Facebook, and it's got their events scheduled right there. And classes that I have taught all, since the pandemic started, are all video logged on my website. You can check them out at amyblackthorn.com or blackthornsbotanicals.com and just click on the Blackthorn School of Magic tab. And there's about 10 videos there now that you can check out. There's some free interview pages and YouTube links. There's also some paid classes that you can take. Those are 2 hours long. So there's a lot of fun things to do and explore. You can also check out some different teas, and my books are all available autographed from blackthornsbotanicals.com. So you can get an autographed copy directly from the author and support. That would be fantastic too.
Right. If you buy the book from your website, you have your own copies, but don't you get a larger cut?
Yes, my profit is higher when you buy it directly from me.
Right, yeah. Not the same as when you get it from someplace else. So it's always a good thing to remember. So, again, thank you for being with us tonight, and make sure to check out Amy Blackthorn's various websites here, her personal website page, and the Blackthorn Botanical, blackthornsbotanicals.com. And you are also found on Facebook, as well as some of the things you've just mentioned, and you are a podcaster. So you are a variety of different internet mediums.
Yes, I'm available everywhere. Which means I spend a lot of time playing on my phone. It's just a nice way of saying it.
Well, it's okay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And, David, what are you going to take us out with?
Well, since it's all about brews and potions and things like that, what we have online uploaded about the closest is Cauldron, because it's got the word cauldron in the title.
Okay.
The Cauldron Born by David Bard.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, thank you, and we will see everybody
on
the radio.
Yeah, we'll be back with another Moon Magic in 2 weeks.
That's right. We're going to do something.
Moon.
That's right.
Blue Moon.
Yes, and that is a very powerful moon for us to do a lot of hardcore magical stuff.
Yep.
Well, thank you, and have a great night.
Thank you, Amy.
Of blood and bone, of womb and tomb and standing stone. Lady, stir your cauldron well, chant your words and sing just like hell. Deep within this dark and cold, hear the goddess Ceridwen call. The powers of earth, sea, and sky, of dragon and fairy, and shades of the night. He calls to his ancestors of blood and thrill.
Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.